Welcome, episode one of The Card Is Going to Change, presented by AIW and sponsored by Smart Mark Video and the This Is Awesome Wrestling Show. I'm your moderator, Glenn Moore, and I'm joined here in studio by the co-founders of AIW, giving you a kind of a backstage feel and revealing some stories, some tales from the locker room and from AIW. I want to bring on John Thorne and Chandler Biggins on the show. First, John, why the podcast?
Well, you know, I'll be the first to admit, like, every time somebody comes with, involved in wrestling, comes out with a podcast, it's kind of like eye rolling at this point, you know? But, you know, after thinking about it, I feel that there's a big kind of disconnect between reality and, like, fans' expectations of things. Like, it's very easy for a fan to just be like, why don't you book Pentagon Jr. versus Tanahashi, you know? And they don't understand that they're, like, all the things that go into, say, booking a show or booking talents or bringing all these people together. And so many stupid things happen to AIW, it seems, all the time. Like, we're always kind of cursed with, like, some sort of injury or cancellation or things that are just outside of our control. And we were just kind of talking one day, and we're just like, you know, let's just sit down for a half hour once a week and just kind of talk about this stuff, because, you know, it just seems so informal to just be like, oh, blah, 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 can't make it, and just tweet it out. You know what I mean? With no real context or anything. So, you know, this is just kind of our forum to just sit and talk and discuss things that maybe happened or were supposed to happen or why they happened. And just kind of, I don't know, give people an inside look at, you know, what we do and what our process is, because, you know, thinking about it as, you know, I am a wrestling fan, and, you know, if I was able to just listen to stuff like this, you know, when I was 14 years old, like, I would probably would kill for something like this. So this is, you know, just kind of our little idea to see if people are interested in what we do and how we do it. And I mean, if not, they don't have to listen, but I think we can provide at least some interesting stories and kind of pull the curtain back, I guess, a little bit. Well, what do you think, Mr. Biggins?
I definitely think that tweeting something out, it's hard to read a tweet and then know the entire backstory. So I think this is going to be a way to be transparent, and heck, definitely things happen in AIW. I don't think that could happen anywhere else, especially behind the scenes. And some of the mayhem and the mishaps, I think, are going to lead to some good stories on here.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, just a way to give context to certain things, and, you know, maybe a little bit more of explanation. Because, you know, like, I know what it's like, man. I know what being a wrestling fan's like. I know when something doesn't happen or something you're really excited for falls through. You kind of just, like, roll your eyes or, you know, it just rubs people kind of wrong. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll be able to just, you know, talk and give our side of the story on various different things and see how it goes.
Yeah, we only have almost 12 years now?
I don't know. It's been way too long. I've wasted my entire adult life.
12 years of some of the craziest things that ever happened in my life, at least.
There's plenty of ways to get a hold of these two. Obviously on Twitter, they both have their Twitter. But also, if you want to ask questions for future episodes, there's going to be different themed episodes. And you guys will be dropping a show once a week. And this week is going to be about J-Lit. So you guys can tweet questions at AI Wrestling. Obviously, Facebook, Absolute Intense Wrestling. You guys can ask questions when shows are dropped for future episodes. But J-Lit this past weekend, how they successful. Place is packed. A lot of great wrestling, a lot of unique personalities coming to AIW. You guys, successful weekend?
Yeah, I would say we were very, very kind of shocked at how it all turned out. So many things could have went wrong with the Cavs playing and, you know, trying to get all those people under one roof. And it was such a high, very expensive talent budget. We were pretty stressed out. So, you know, to go out there and see, you know, like, I don't know if anybody remembers last year's J-Lit, but night one was a disaster, and night two wasn't much better because we went against the Cavs, and then there was a big the big Michael Brillo police verdict, and you know, in the shootout or the police shootout. So the kind of the whole city was on high alert, waiting on riots. So we were just kind of like, I don't want to say dreading it, but very, very worried at how Jaylit would turn out this year after it being such a disappointment last year.
And the fact that the Cavs are playing again.
And the Cavs are playing again, and we were going up against, you know, a Cavs game, you know, Eastern Conference Finals game. So, you know, we had so much kind of like, I don't know, I guess high-level stress. And, you know, I kind of hide when the doors open. Biggins kind of, you know, he's forced to deal with the reality a little bit sooner than I am because he runs the door. But, like, I typically hide in the back until, like, the first match or so is going on because, like, I just, like, can't mentally handle, like, walking upstairs and seeing, like, a row of people because, like, I know what's kind of on the line. I know, like, okay, this is my car payment. This is my apartment rent. This is, you know, everything. So when I walked upstairs and I was expecting the worst and I saw, you know, the bleachers pretty much full and all the seats full, I was like, oh my God, like, thank fucking God. But yeah, I would say it was a very successful weekend compared to what we were kind of, we always plan for the worst and we were planning for a fucking absolute disaster. So
yeah, sitting at the door, the beginning of every time the doors open, I'm always a little worried, but people start arriving multiple times. So, but yeah, both nights who I thought were great. No affection by the Cavs, I don't think.
Affection, is that a word?
Affection. Can we cut that?
No, let's keep it rolling. Affection, no effects from the Cavs, no negative impact.
Yeah, but you know, I thought it both went good. Easily not our biggest draw at Mark Carmel, but probably our biggest Jaylit draw of all time, I think.
You guys had some unique personalities and some first timers. You had badass Billy Gunn with his vape machine and all. You had Dan Severin, the Beast, who was. Okay, this guy, as a fan, I thought he'd get a decent pop, but this guy probably got one of the biggest pops all weekend.
Dan Severin?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like, I don't want to say that it kind of started off as a joke, but it kind of started off as a joke. When we start planning the Jaylit, we try to come up with the most obscure talent that we could potentially find. And specifically a guy named Adam Lash was like, he's like the biggest fucking Dan Severin fan in the on the planet. And for the last year, he just has been tweeting about the greatness of Dan Severin's like 1995 NWA title run that nobody knows about.
And tweeted probably every major promotion.
Yeah.
When you're going to book Dan Severin.
Dan Severin's ready for a run, like just fucking with him. And we're kind of like, okay, you know, we'll reach out to Dan Severin. And, you know, that was actually such, like, a process because I think I emailed Dan Severin in November or December as soon as we set the dates officially. And he was just, like, he didn't think it was real. He thought it was, like, somebody messing with him because he was just, like, independent promotions don't plan 4 to 5, 6 months in advance. He goes, there's probably no way this show is happening. And then, you know, he would call me and we would have to have these long conversations. Dan Severin loves the fucking talk. You know, I just kept assuring him, yeah, Dan, the show's happening. The show's happening. Up until, like, doors were about to open, Dan Severin was texting me, like, is the show still going on? Then he's like, can I have 3 gimmick tables? And we're like, yeah, the show's happening. You can have your 3 gimmick tables. But, you know,
which I said no to, and then Thorne goes, well, you could tell.
Yeah, he was like, no fucking way Dan Severin can't have 3 fucking gimmick tables. You know how many people are here? I said, okay, man, you go tell Dan the Beast Severin and all his UFC belts, no, you can't have 3 gimmick tables. I wasn't going to fucking tell him that.
I said at that point he could have 5.
Yeah, like, fuck. But, so, you know, that's just kind of a weird thing, like, and we reached out to so many different weird people. We tried to get Takamichi Noku, the great Sasuke. There was a point in time where the number 24 spot was down to Danny Doring or Flamita from Mexico. And it was like going back and forth, like who is it going to go to? Who's it going to go to? And then it turned out neither of them could do it. But there was all sorts of people that were in the tournament that like had to pull out before, you know, any public knowledge. Like the Amazing Red was in, Michael Elgin was in. There's all sorts of other people that we had reached out to.
And then my number one draft pick, of course, Pretty Paul Roma from WCW.
Oh my God.
And WWE.
This Paul, like, so, you know, going back to trying to find these weird people and negotiate with these weird people, I don't know whose idea it was, but one day we were just like, fucking Paul Roma would be so sweet in the jail.
We found that, somebody sent us that match.
Yeah. Or we saw this match of Paul Roma wrestling in like 2015, and he is jacked as fuck, and he's wearing the fucking Power and Glory gear, coming out with this cut off sweatshirt on and the sunglasses. So we're like, okay, Paul Roma is, cause
look like a million bucks.
And like, I think we've kind of developed this reputation of we just want to book these this most obscure talents that we could possibly find, because I don't know, it's just like in a day and age where like most of the independents are just kind of like trying to emulate, you know, whatever the hot thing is. Like, we're trying to be completely different. So like everyone else is trying to track down like fucking Marty Scroll or, you know, some dude from Japan. And we're trying to track down Paul Roma and like these guys that don't even have a presence on the internet.
Well,
like,
he does have a Facebook. We emailed that, got no response. And then so I tracked down a phone number for him. I called this guy. He can't believe anybody's calling him.
Yeah, like, so we're like, fuck, yeah, like, Paul Roma is in. Like I think we found his wrestling school, and we had to call, like, a landline
at
his wrestling
school. Yeah, it went to his, like, home, I think.
Yeah, like, so, we found this wrestling school that Paul Roma trains at somewhere in Connecticut, and it was like, oh, call this number to find out about classes to train with Paul Roma. So Biggins calls this number, and it's, like, definitely just Paul Roma's house. And
like, I think he was, like, cooking dinner.
Yeah, and he was just like, he, you know, just like the Dan Severn thing, he thought it was like a joke. He's like, what? He's like, somebody wants to book me? No, this is, who is this? This is a fucking joke. And, you know, we're like, no, like, we want to book you. And he's just like, all right, let me think about it. Call me back tomorrow. And then yeah, Biggins calls him back.
So I called him back the next day, and he goes, what's your offer? And I gave him what I considered a very fair offer. And he goes, let me think about it. I'll email you tomorrow. So he emails me back, and he wants $1,000.
Per match.
Per match.
Plus, I think he wanted, like, well, he wanted a flight, he wanted a hotel, and he had some other fucking weird request.
No, that was afterwards. I said, no way. So then he wrote back, and he goes, I will do your offer if you book three of my students and they drive me.
And they also get spots in the tournament. So now, you know, we're giving up... It's like giving up like valuable real estate. So now instead of just giving up one spot is kind of like a ha-ha, like this is fucking weird. Now Paul Roma has like asked us to give up 4 to 5 spots in the 24-person tournament.
A whole van load of,
you know, 3 or 4 of which nobody has ever heard of in their lives. So, you know, and I remember I was so fucking pumped for Paul Roma. And we had actually started looking into getting AIW student Kaplan matching gear so Paul Roma could get eliminated on night one, and then on night two they could do Power and Glory.
This is a real thing.
This was a real thing. He was going to get power tights just like Hercules had, and we were looking into finding those stupid 80s sunglasses that they wore. And then it all fell apart, and I go into what I call like wrestling depression when something falls through. We're like, no fucking idea on the planet is ever going to be as good as that idea. So, you know, no idea was going to even fucking come close to that. And then who the fuck, like, then we started trying to get somebody else. And, you know, that was the next best thing. I'm trying to think of who. Oh, then, so Paul Roma was like, nothing could have topped that. And then we see this fucking Steve Blackman bounty hunter video that's going around on the internet. So then I get really fucking hot on Steve Blackman, and I'm like, nothing is going to top Steve Blackman in the jailer.
And phone calls, emails were not answered.
Yeah, so like we're calling this fucking bail bonds company that Steve Blackman owns. We're not, like, this is the kind of, like, you know, like, I don't know if people understand the lengths that you have to go to like track down some of these like obscure people, because like I don't think that these guys are like out of the business because like, you know, they're just not good enough anymore. These guys like go out of the business because like they don't want to be found.
Yeah, and I think like in Dan Severn's case, how gun-shy he was, maybe he's just been burned so many times.
Yeah, because, you know, like I'm sure these guys have been like ripped off by people and like whatever. So some of these guys just, they kind of go out into the real world and, you know, that's just what they want to do. So like we're, you know, we can't get any response out of Steve Blackman.
And we were trying to figure out how to turn the lights out at Mark Carmel and have his glow-in-the-dark shit.
Oh, yeah. We're trying to figure out how to get, like, a whole fucking, like, glow-stick entrance for Steve Blackman. Like, this is kind of, so people think, you know, we have this, like, people think getting on the creative team of an independent wrestling company is, like, this real fucking serious thing. And it's literally us texting back and forth, like, hey, man, I think we should book Steve Blackman simply so he can come out with glow sticks at the Jaylit. That's the extent of the idea.
And that interrupts the text where we pitch the weird world versus the Nasty Boys.
Oh, yes, yes. And, you know, like, so we were trying to get all these fucking weird people. Like, we tried to get Taka Michinoku. So, like, that's, like, a whole thing. Like, you have to kind of find, like, these like Japanese handlers that are located in America, and like they have all these ties to like the Japanese professional wrestling offices, because over there like everything is associated with an office. So like I find this like, you know, kind of like Japanese middle person, and you know, I say, hey, I want to book Taka Michinoku, and so, you know, they go and reach out to him, and you know, they return with, oh, Taka doesn't want to come to America. Sorry, like that's it. Like that, like that's the
end. No negotiation.
That's the end of the Taka Michinoku plan. You know, we were going back and forth with like I said, Danny Doering. I wanted Danny. Like, I sent some people and some fans. Like, I have like this weird kind of like secret focus group of fans where I don't even know if there's like, they understand that they're in a group of people, but like I'll send like ideas to them. And if some of them like showed you what the original like list for Jaylit was and what it turned out to be, it was completely different.
I think the first list was like almost all students.
There was like a good amount of AIW students, but like, you know, we realized like with the students, like we're trying to like get them out there and get them like notoriety. But at the same time, we understand that like, wrestling fans don't really give a fuck about students because they're labeled students. So, like, it's kind of like a weird middle ground. So, like, one of the first Jaylit drafts was, like, five or six spots were AIW students. And then, like, we kind of started getting some negative, like, responses from, you know, from, like, the focus group people, so to speak. So, yeah, like, it all changed. And then it, you know, it ended up being, like, Billy Gunn and, like, fucking Hornswoggle there for some reason, and Dan Severn.
And like Billy Gunn was just a fluke thing because he got fired.
Yeah, he got fired, and then like I actually like got a hold of him through somebody currently employed by the World Wrestling Entertainment. They put me kind of, because Billy Gunn had like, he had a Twitter, but he had like no like, hey, contact me here, book me here. So like it required like a little bit of finesse, I guess, to get a hold of him. And he originally was like booked for a tour of Mexico, and like he denied the dates. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, you know, maybe even 2 months later, he was just like, hey, this Mexico tour fell through. Could you still use me? And we were able to work it out, because like I said, there was so many people that were originally booked that had to cancel for different reasons, like Amazing Red and Michael Elgin. And
I think Elgin was one of the first guys booked.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and there was other people that were booked that ended up having to pull out. So, you know, that's just kind of how it goes. But, you know, and then, you know, there was like all these different things that we had planned that fell through. Like, the Motor City Machine Guns were supposed to answer the Weird World Challenge on day two. And like that was kind of booked for like, I don't know, months. And then like week of, like some things kind of went awry with that deal, and it kind of fell through. So we were kind of forced to book a lot of things on the fly. Like Hornswoggle and Hawkins weren't supposed to be a tag team. That was kind of a thing that we had to come up with like on Friday night. I think we came up with that at the bar drinking because we really had no solution to the machine guns thing. And then the machine guns were supposed to beat up the weird world. And then Johnny and Candice LeRae were supposed to kind of come in and save their students. And we were going to do Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae against the Motor City Machine Guns on the night show, like virtually unadvertised.
Yeah, because the Motor City Machine Guns had gotten like full lucha outfits and they were supposed to come out. I forget the tag name.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were going to beat up the Weird World and then unmask because Alex Shelley lost the Lose or Leaves Town match. And then
yeah, like
that all went to shit.
Yeah, it all kind of fell apart. And like we were super looking forward to doing something like that because like, you know, the Motor City Machine Guns coming out unadvertised, wrestling Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae with like a few hours notice. We thought that would kind of be a thing that like wouldn't necessarily drive ticket sales that night, but it would kind of be like one of those viral, like, what the fuck? Like, I probably shouldn't have missed AIW tonight to go fucking eat a corn dog
at a
carnival.
It was kind of like a crazy thing to happen on like a student show.
Yeah, yeah. And like, that's the whole reason kind of why we developed that student show was just kind of for that spot. And also because like we realized that they didn't really have places in the actual J-Lit tournament yet. So we kind of wanted to give them a less pressure type of thing. And then the Hope and Change reunion was like, you know, I think a lot of people think that there was like a big plan for that. And that was kind of like a last minute thing that, you know, kind of came together
like
and made
left over almost.
And it kind of came together and made sense. And, you know, after sitting down with them, we've kind of figured out kind of a way to go about it. But like, none of that stuff was planned. I hate to, you know, ruin anybody's, like, I don't know, whatever. Like, we're really not that smart, but...
Well, and to talk about, you know, being scared about the draws and everything, the week of the show is the most stressful time, and we had so much going on that week of the show. We had the Motor City Machine Gun stuff, and then somehow, just with, like, a fluke thing, Kurt Hawkins, Brian Myers, and Hot Sauce Tracy Williams had no way to get to the show. So, like, poor Tracy Williams had to do, like, a John Candy thing, planes, trains, and automobiles.
Yeah, we had to get him, like, on an Amtrak to a carload of people to, like, get to AIW, and then, like, he had to take a carload back, you know, to, like, I think hop on a flight. But, like, that's another thing that, like, I don't think people understand is, like, arranging travel for, you know, 30-plus people is a headache because, like, you know, it's easy for like I said, like, you know, a fan on Twitter to go, hey, book this guy versus this guy. Okay, well, you got to take into consideration, like, all right, I got to figure out how to get this guy here. We have to pay for his transportation. We have to pay for his fee. So, like, you know, it's sometimes it's just really not financially responsible to, like, fly Pentagon Jr. from, you know, from Mexico City every month. It's just...
Well, and dealing with all the politics of... He's a contracted worker, and, you know, ROH, TNA, AAA, a lot of stuff that fans want, yeah, they don't understand that we're kind of, like, handcuffed a lot of times.
Yeah, like, we're, like, there's, like, a lot of kind of red tape you got to go through to make all this stuff happen. Like, you know, we'll eventually, I'm sure, talk about the Absolution 10 main event that had, like, somebody from, like, every major company in it. That was so incredibly hard to coordinate and work out with everybody. But, yeah, you know, like... Other than that, I think, you know, J-Lit was a success. You know, I think that's kind of why we wanted to do this podcast and call it, you know, The Card Is Going to Change, because, you know, we have all these grand ideas written down on paper and, you know, it's typed up, it's ready to go. And then, you know, stuff like that happens, like the Motor City Machine Guns thing threw off like virtually two shows, and we were forced to kind of think of stuff on the fly. And I think, you know, over the years, we've kind of developed, like, that's kind of, I don't know, I guess our specialty is being able to fix problems like that, because it just seems like something always happens with our, you know, with our dream cards or whatever we put together on paper, and it's like, fuck yeah, man, this is the best fucking card ever. And then, like, everything goes wrong, and we're forced to kind of, like,
well, perfect pick example, up the pieces. I think a lot of people were excited for, like, Hot Sauce and Tyson Dukes, and what was it, like, 8 o'clock, you and I were, like, scrambling to find somebody.
Yeah, like Tyson Dukes was just like, hey, I'm not gonna make it. There's all this like traffic heading towards the border because there was power lines down, and it was just like, 7:45, and he like I was just like, dude, have you entered America yet? And he was just like, no, man, I'm not even close. Right now, my GPS says I'll be there at 10 p.m. And like we're just like, fuck, like you know, like what are we gonna do? So you know, we look around, and you know, there was other workers there, but like you know, we have Dominic Guarini, who's you know, who's fairly new. He's a student, but that guy is ranked top 10 in the world in jiu-jitsu. That guy is, you know, basically custom made to wrestle somebody like Tracy Williams. And, you know, I just looked at him. He was sitting at the gimmick table selling beer tickets. The doors were open. The first match had happened. And I just go, hey, man, do you have your gear? He's like, yeah, why? And I was like, you're wrestling Tracy Williams tonight. And
in, like, the third to last match.
Well, it was Tyson Dukes and Tracy Williams was supposed to go on, like, third. Yeah. That was supposed to be the third match.
And then you bumped that back, like, way early.
Yeah, and, like, when Tyson said he was running late, we had to, like, make adjustments. Like, if you saw the run sheet, the booking sheet in the back, like, there was all these arrows pointing in different directions. But, yeah, I looked at Dom, and I was just like, hey, man, you're wrestling Tracy Williams tonight. Go get your gear. And he was kind of like, what the fuck? But
like, almost like it was a rib.
But, like, that's just kind of, you know, that's just how it goes, especially for, like, you know, young wrestlers. Like, you just got to be around.
That's
like,
why they tell you always bring your shit.
You got to be the first, like you got to be the first guy I see basically when there's a problem. But
that's how Singh got in last year too.
Yeah, same thing happened last year because we had a bunch of border trouble.
Tyson.
Yeah. So yeah, Tyson he's fucking cursed with the jail.
Yeah, I don't know if he's gonna be in next year.
But yeah, you know, and like we were able to make it out alive, and like the big, you know, a big part of the jailet is the jailet party that is kind of infamous, which. We greatly look forward to every year because, you know, that's kind of our one night a year to where we can just hang out and let loose with everybody. Because that's the thing, you know, everyone thinks, you know, these guys come in and we're like great friends and, you know, we are friends. But, you know, they come in on a Friday night and they're leaving on a Friday night most of the time because they got to make it to their next show somewhere else. So we don't really get a lot of time to just like hang out and like have fun. So the jailet every year.
Or if there is hangout, it's usually over Moons over Miami.
Yeah, like a quick Denny's meal or something. So, like, jailet is, like, the time where we can let loose and get fucking fucked up and, like, hang out and have fun and just kind of, like, you know, have no worries. So, you know, we were lucky enough to have, like, a sponsor this year, Nax Eatery and Drinkery. And I don't think that they understood when we told them, hey, this place is going to be fucking packed. Like, I think they thought it was going to be, like, a softball fundraiser where there's going to be, like, 25 dudes in there drinking draft beer.
Looked like a hurricane hit that place.
But, like, you know, we came in, we packed it, and fucking we got hammered in that. You know, I would say the highlight of that is Homicide trying to, for real, give Hornswoggle a cop killer as throughout the night in the bar and Hornswoggle having to run away. It was just a fun time, and then, you know... After the after party, that's when the real party starts back at the hotel rooms.
And a lot of people ask us why America's Best Value and not the Marriott. Why not the Marriott? Why not the Hilton? That place does not give a fuck.
Yeah, they do not give a fuck what we do, and like we fucking trash it. At 5 o'clock in the morning, me and Homicide, I walked up to Homicide. I was fucking like blackout.
While Homicide for the last 3 hours was trying to trash your room.
Yeah, I walked up to Homicide and I said, hey, I'm Homicide. He's like, what? I was like, I want to see if I'm a man. Let's go. And, like, we started fucking kind of fighting and, like, wrestling. And, like, fucking, we destroyed my whole hotel room. Like, TVs falls down. Fucking, the fucking...
Every lamp.
The lamps are fucking getting shattered.
And the only person out of everybody in the entire roster that Homicide will listen to is one Steve Guy.
Steve Guy, ring announcer, like co-host of the This Is Awesome Wrestling Show. Steve Guy was the voice of reason when we are trashing my own hotel room that is in my name, that is on my credit card.
The mattress is on the floor already because Homicide tried to throw it over a balcony.
Yeah, Homicide was trying to throw it over the balcony. There was just fucking all sorts of chaos, a lot of which we cannot discuss. But that's just kind of like a little bit of insight as, you know, the jailet is about having good shows and, you know, all that. But it's also about like that party, you know, that getting that camaraderie with the boys.
My question to you, and kind of we're getting towards the end here, what went into the format, the pairings, and the switching the tournament from, you know, a single elimination to three fatal four ways and then having the triple threat. You know, what made that decision come about?
I think, you know, we love having the big tournament, you know, like, I think, you know, we would both say that, like, we wanted to be what IWA Mid-South was. We wanted to be what the TBI was. Like, we wanted that kind of big indie format, you know, long tournament. And I just think where society is at now with, like, everybody has a voice and everybody thinks they know how to run a show. And, like, I think, you know, people just, it's kind of like, you know, the short attention span of society. And I think people love reading about the long tournament. I don't think people like watching the long tournament anymore. So it was just kind of our way of, you know, we've seen the complaints over the years, you know, the show is too long. The show is too long. It's a great tournament, but it's too many matches. So that was just kind of us listening to what people had to say and realizing like, hey, you know, people really aren't down with this anymore. Let's try something different.
And it was another way to, you know, we're using a TPI format from IWA. It's kind of a way to make it our tournament too, which is something that was in the back of our heads as well.
Yeah, like, and, you know, a lot of people were kind of like, so those same people that say they hated the long shows were the same people that are like, I don't like this new format. Well, you know,
they
hadn't even seen the new format. So we put a lot of time into that. We tried to, you know, think of some really weird matchups. And, you know, for the most part, you know, like a fan, like he writes the Super No Bueno blog. You know, he came up to me and he was just like, you know, I hated this foray idea, but now I actually think I really love it. And, you know, I looked at him. I was like, yeah, man, you just got to trust us. You know, like we understand what it's like to be a fan, but we also are promoters as well. Like,
And we talked, what, probably about 50 different formats?
Yeah, we tried so many different things. And then, you know, it was also cool because, you know, on night two, you essentially have four tournament matches, and then the rest is kind of a mystery to play around with. You know, we were able to do Hornswoggle and Kurt Hawkins against Big Mo and Little Guido, which...
Oh, that was,
man,
my dream.
I just want to say on record, I love Little Guido. I wish he was my uncle. He is the fucking best dude ever. But, you know, we were just able to do, like, a lot of fun, weird things, you know?
And one quick thing. When all those dudes got fired on Black Friday recently, it was what people call it, Hornswoggle reached out to us, and it was kind of a weird thing because people were like, why did you book Hornswoggle and not Damian Sandow? Well, Hornswoggle came to us, and it just was, like, a perfect fit.
Yeah, and, like, you know, he was just like, hey, you know, AIW is on my bucket list of things to do. I really want to work for you guys. How do we make it work? You know, it was essentially a week and a half notice, you know, and like he gets it. He understands. And, you know, we were able to, you know, work something out that worked for both parties because Hornswoggle wants to work. He wants to get bookings. You know, like you email a guy like Damian Sandow, he wants a lot of money.
He wants a lot of Paul Romas.
Yeah. And not saying that Hornswoggle doesn't, but Hornswoggle also, he wants to get out there and work. And, you know, like Jerry Lynn would always say, like, give yourself a fair price and you're going to work, you know, forever. Or you can get those quick payday scoops and that's going to dry out pretty quick. So, you know, and people were kind of like, Hornswoggle. I think that the same people that hated that format and hated that we booked Hornswoggle all came out with kind of a different, you know, a different mindset after they saw Hornswoggle and how hard he worked and like how entertaining
it was. And how much fun he was having. He was like infectious.
Yeah, he was having so much fun. And man, that dude can fucking drink. Just let me say that dude was killing it at the after party. Cause it was his
Can't
birthday
take
weekend.
A cop killer though.
Yeah. It wouldn't take a fucking cop killer, but if you followed me on Instagram, and I put it on my Facebook, Homicide trying to fucking attack Hornswoggle. But, yeah, I don't know. I hope this was kind of interesting for people to kind of get our thought process. If you think it sucks, please tweet me at John Thorne AIW and say your fucking podcast idea is stupid.
Will you guys have Hornswoggle back at AIW?
We've tried to give him multiple dates, and like he's not available.
Because right now he's, you know, just out of WWE, so he's like high in demand. Not to say that he won't always be, but we're trying.
Yeah, we've offered him like I think four dates, and like everyone is like, nope.
He's like, shit, I'm booked in
Buffalo. I'm doing an autograph signing at a car dealership. But yeah, you know, and like Billy Gunn was awesome. I don't want to kind of overlook that. But
and got to give props to Big Damo from Scotland
and Laredo Kid, who's fucking unreal. We have offered Dan Severn another date, and we're just waiting on him to confirm because he was just way too fucking over and way too fucking awesome. So, yeah, you know, hopefully we can kind of shed some light on some different stories over the next couple weeks or years or however long you guys want to listen to us.
Till the wheels come off.
Yeah, fuck it.
This has been The Card Is Going to Change, presented by AIW. Each and every week, they'll be dropping an episode. You can follow the show on iTunes, Stitcher. The show is everywhere on Libsyn if you want a direct download of the MP3 file. But subscribe, leave a comment, rate.
Review.
Review, too.
Buy something.
Get that algorithm up. Is that how you say it? Algorithm. This is a fan-supported, listener-supported podcast just for you. Whatever Colt Cabana says, you know. He's the fucking godfather.
From the studio. This is a studio.
This is a real studio.
Yeah, actually. Studio.
This is fancy. But yeah, hope you guys like it, and let us know. Give us some feedback.
Thanks.